Well, my friends, please just listen to me for a moment. It's Life in Equinox podcast time. Haha. Wahoo! Excitement, galore, cheers, screaming fans. Hey, I can dream, can't I? Don't look at me that way. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for Life in Equinox podcast number 12. Podcastmonium, if you're really picky. I'm not. Don't ask me why. It doesn't really make much sense anyways. But monium added to any word gives it a nice sense of prescription drugs, which is kind of like digesting the Life in Equinox podcast. So, thank you for listening. Yeah, I love that really, you know, self-supportive attitude of mine. Yeah. Before I get into the nitty-gritty, funny-jummy, whatever, things that rhyme, details of this week's podcast, I'd like to do two little announcements. I have a couple things I want to, you know, just say. That's what announcements means. Alright, moving on. First and foremost, the Lammies, the large association of movie bloggers, awards for their, its members. Nominations end on Wednesday, the 12th. I don't know what time, but if you have yet to do your nominations, don't forget. Especially don't forget me, because I love you. You're unique, you're special, and you're everything that completes me. I just can't live without my nominations. Oh, and you. Right, alright. And to, I guess, a more prevalent thing, well, to me at least, if you've noticed, from now on I will no longer be uploading this podcast to mypodcast.com. Because they're only working once every 68 years. And I get tired of going there, them not working, I mean, we having to wait 2 days, and maybe it worked, then I had to reformat, and, you know, eh. So I switched over to Podomatic, which is also the one the largest association of movie bloggers use is. That was a very long use, huh? They use, and so if you want to update your bookmarks or whatever, because I know you all keep me really high on your bookmarks, just in case, you go to univarn.podomatic.com. Podomatic is spelled P-O-D-O-M-A-T-I-C. Univarn is spelled the way you know and love, U-N-I-V-A-R-N. And also, if you have me on iTunes, odds are you still probably have me on iTunes from way back on GCast. I was talking to some people who still have that. You need to update your iTunes feeds. Since I don't have direct access to the back end of the RSS, I can't update it manually. It's a lot of techno mumbo jumbo that really annoys me. Because iTunes, even though I created the podcast, doesn't have a change feed button. Don't ask me why. I didn't invent it. If I was a programmer for them, I would, but I'm not. Hire me. But there is that. So, you can go to univarn.podomatic.com. I'll post a link in this post to that, and directly to the iTunes feed. On the right side, you'll see subscribe via iTunes. And, well, that's enough of that stuff, right? You're already bored. You probably turned it off. Cries. Well, I got to thinking this past week with some of the movies I watched. And you ever have a conversation with somebody? Somebody comes up to you and they say, "Man, I've got to tell you this awesome story." Now you hear "awesome story," you're like, "Oh my god, awesome story? Go, tell it, let's go, come on." And they start talking to you about this thing that happened to them, or a thing they saw happened, or whatever. And as you're listening to the story, it becomes painfully obvious to you within about 10 to 20 seconds how this story is going to end. Not the events that's going to transpire, but you know that little tidbit he's going to have to add on to the end. But you sit there because you're a kind person and listen to the story, and he talks, or she talks, because I'm not a sexist individual. Yes, I am.
No, I'm not. Leave me alone.
Right. They're telling the story, and you're listening, and you're nodding, and then they get to the end, and they look at you, and they're expecting some sort of reaction, maybe a chuckle or a, "Wow, really?" And you're just sitting there smiling, kind of a half smile, like, "Ah, yeah." And then they whip around with the time-tested, hated by all, "Well, I guess you just had to be there" phrase. I'm not a big fan of the phrase. But to the very first film I'm going to be talking about today, that really applies well. It is Paprika, directed by Satoshi Kon. It's an anime film. Sorry to my anime dislikers. You can turn it off. I'm not going to talk about it too long because it's a movie that it's impossible to explain like most interpretational films are. Because, I mean, pretty much you would have writing the same thing for all interpretational films. Pretty pictures, good, interesting, go watch. Because you can't say anything else because it's so interpretational and the visuals are so raw and personal to how you interpret them. Will completely affect how you like it. And so I can't tell you much about Paprika. I mean, the basic story is rather interesting, but once it gets to the end, it doesn't make sense anymore. As most interpretational films inevitably become. They start off, oh, we got the simple plot here, and then we're gonna go, pfft, and that's the end. How was that? He went, pfft. Well, that's where all the pretty images show up, and then somebody explodes, and we eat a baby, and that's the end. Wait, what? But... Well, actually, in this film, I think it's the other way around. The baby eats the world. But don't ask me. It's very confusing. I'd like to see some art. I should go check out some articles on it. But I would have recommended it. It's incredibly beautiful animation. Very creative visuals, which I think is very important for interpretational films, especially modern ones like The Fountain and such, where the visuals are kind of the backbone of the story. And if you really know the visuals, you can kind of pick out the references and such. But that... All said and done, I would highly recommend you check it out. It was a lot of fun to watch, very intriguing experience. I do recommend it. Now, we're going to move on from almost an entirely different direction from here on out. Because I got a lot of dramas and action films, well, one action film, a couple dramas, on the menu today. And I'm going to try and breeze through a few of these, because I already got reviews of a couple of them, so... As you all know, I am a member of the 1001 Movies You Must See Club. 1001 Movies You Must See at blogspot.com. And last week we did a movie called The Official Story. Now, I didn't watch this week's movie, The Man Bites Dog, because it didn't look appealing to me at all. I don't like graphic violence films. If I can avoid them, I will. But I wanted to see The Official Story because I like historical peak character films. I can't think of a good one off the top of my head. That kind of annoys me, but that's really what this is. You follow this family of Alicia, her husband, and her daughter, Gabby. And I should say, it's directed by Luis Prenzo, so I don't want to feel like a jerk and leave him out, but Norma Alejandro, who plays the main character, Alicia, the mother of Gabby, who's finding out about the atrocities that occurred during the Argentinian Dirty War of the 70s, Now, in real life, Norma Alejandro was, I think, actually, I read one of the many liberals who had to leave the country during the events because of what basically happened. If you don't know, quick historical context. The Argentinian government started performing torture and, I guess you could just call it sort of kidnapping against individuals who were... of a different political spectrum, the far more liberal individuals. They were taking them in, they were locking them in rooms. If you were pregnant, they would take your baby and sell it to people who didn't want to ask questions. And that's really the one of the backbones of the story. Alicia, who adopted her daughter, Gabby, wants to know if her daughter was one of these girls. And that's pretty much the entire story, is her trying to figure that out. And what it leads to her figuring out about her husband, what he does. And I enjoyed it more than most of the members, I think, because the performances were just amazing. Especially Analia Castro, who plays the young Gabby, who really just has to make you feel really for that character. She was amazing. And I enjoyed it. The one complaint I had is that it tends to get a little soap opera-y, and then you keep piling character plots on top of character plots until it kind of self-explodes. And it's very ambiguous. The ending is not, and they all walked this way, and they all did that, and these things happened. You really get left on a what'll happen. You know, nobody knows what'll happen. So, you find that a lot more in foreign films as well, but that's not the point. It really is interesting to see how they tackled it. I think it's a good movie, especially if you're interested in the events. And if you're not, hopefully my 2-second intro kind of helps provide historical context for it. And I'll be talking more about historical films at the end of it, so stick around for that. Another movie that I got to see about a couple weeks ago or so was Tom Ford's A Single Man, starring Colin Firth, Julianne Moore, Matthew Good. And it's one of those movies you watch, and the immediate reaction is, ooh, pretty. Because Tom Ford's shots, some of the shots he does in this movie are just downright gorgeous. If you're a cinematography person or just a camera person, you're probably going to love to watch them. Especially, though, Colin Firth's performance is really great, because Colin Firth has always just been one of those just pristine actors I think everybody likes. But you add to that just sort of the somber character, the downtrodden lover without his boyfriend in this case. And it provides a nice layered film. You really kind of get that sense of social context. Or I guess I would say social outcast with this character, because people try to treat him, you know, with a "you're not different, I'm just gonna act like you are" kind of weird double negative attitude. And there's one shot in the movie I particularly remember, one because it was a hilariously weird shot. It's really early in the movie. He's sitting in the toilet looking out through a window at his neighbors playing, his neighbors who was just like, you know, this regular suburban family playing in the yard. And you just see him looking through this little crack, I think in a fence outside of his window in the bathroom. And I don't know, the facial expression he had on his face, it was really memorable, because it was kind of a mix of longing for that lifestyle and yet acceptance that that's not part of his life. He'll never have that, you know, a wife, two kids, a dog, and a picket sort of attitude. But he can have someone to love, and that was nice. The one real complaint I had about the movie is, as it wore on, I think Tom Ford fell back onto the same style he had. I mean, the style in the first 30 minutes really kind of sets the tone, but it ends up repeating a lot, and I don't know, I didn't like that too much. I don't like repetitive style within a movie. And also, at the same time, I didn't care about some of the characters. The Julianne Moore character, I didn't really care about. You could cut out her entire segment. I wouldn't feel as if I had really lost something. So, but overall, I think it was a really good film, a great directorial debut, and I would have liked to see Colin Firth get some more credit for the role. Won't ever happen, though, because that's still a touchy subject. Now, on to the two new movies I got to see this week. And I'm sure a lot of you are going to tune out right now, because you've probably seen neither of them. The first one was a new movie for me, but a really, 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 really old movie. It's a 1945 Kurosawa film. That's right, I haven't seen them all. I keep forgetting, when people ask me, have you seen all the Kurosawa films? I usually say I've seen almost all of them. The one I haven't seen is Jujutsu Kaisen. Now, the way I associate Kurosawa films is anything from Drunken Angel to the end of his life is a Kurosawa film. And if you've watched a lot of Kurosawa films, you'll know why. Because with Drunken Angel, there is a very noticeable change in his style. But that's not the point here. This is called The Men Who Tread on Tiger's Tail. Now, it's only 60 minutes long. And pretty much what it is you're following a group of monks who are actually bodyguards to a prince as they're trying to smuggle the prince out of the country. And you see everything through this porter, played by Kenichi Inamoto, who was a comedian and singer at the time in Japan. And he's guiding them through the forest, and you follow the events really as he sees them. You know, he's the one who finds out that they're actually the bodyguards. He's the one who helps them get into the gates. And it's a really interesting movie because, it's like I said, it's only 60 minutes long. And so what you end up having is really three sequences, kind of like a stage. First is them walking in the forest for the first 20 minutes, and they're talking about, and the porter sort of getting to understand who they really are and what they do. Then the middle section, and that is what I'm going to talk about the most, because the middle section is actually the best part of this movie. And I would say, as a movie, overall, it's pretty mediocre. It's probably maybe a 5.5. It's not that good. But in the middle section, what happens is they're at the gate and they're trying to get through. And so you have sort of an exchange of words between Denjiro Okochi, who plays Benkai, the head of the bodyguards. Very seasoned general, priest, monk, warrior guy. And he's talking with Susumi Fujita, who plays Togashi, who's the leader of the province there, and he's making sure that nobody who's not supposed to get through this gate gets through, because they're looking for this prince. And the exchange that happens between them is worth watching the movie alone, because Denjiro Okochi just nails this middle performance. It really kind of makes me sad that he wasn't in more Kurosawa films. And I'm actually going to go back and watch a couple of his movies, because he was just so good in that middle section. I really swallowed it, because it's really just kind of him performing random acts that a monk would perform to try and convince this Togashi that, oh yeah, I'm a monk, I'm not a general at all. And so he's whipping out all these vocabulary words, and if you've studied anything about Buddhism, you'll know it'll probably help a little bit. And I really just ate it up, you know, the way it's done. That middle section, it's a theatrical segment. And then you have the ending. The problem is, the real issue I have with the movie, I'd say the first part's kind of mediocrely okay, but the last part just isn't entirely unnecessary. It just feels added and nothing happens. They get drunk and then they dance and that. I don't know. You'd have to watch the movie. I don't want to try and spoil too much about it, but the ending's kind of flimsy for me. But I say but a lot, don't I? I just realized that. Sorry about that, but but only on a Life in Equinox podcast. Yay. Yeah, I'm definitely not quitting anytime soon for that singing career of mine. One of the things I really enjoyed about the movie, which might be worth it alone, is Kenichi Inamoto, the guy I talked about who plays the porter. He has one of those rubber faces, kind of like Jim Carrey used to have when he used to do movies in the 80s and 90s. And the facial expressions he makes, oh, they were deliciously awesome. He would just make these over-exaggerated facial expressions, and I would be in my room dying of laughing. People around me probably had to think I was crazy. Because, they were just hilarious. I would watch this movie again, probably just for Denjiro Okochi's middle segment and Kenichi's facial expressions. I'm definitely going to be checking out some of his other movies, because I want to see more of those facial expressions. They were awesome! Now, we're going to move on to the last movie I got to see this week, which is another movie I'm sure none of you are listening to this to, because you don't care. But it's The Good, the Bad, and the Weird, the Korean film directed by Kim Ji-woon, who is a very popular Korean director. You should look up some of his stuff. I won't go into all that. But pretty much what it is, as you may be able to imagine from what its title is, it's kind of quasi-based on The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. At least, I'd say in terms of style, epicness, and three-character format. Could you have The Weird, who is Yoon Tae-gu, a sort of mysterious thief played by Kengo Song. And I realize saying these names means nothing to you, but they deserve acknowledgments because they did pretty good in this movie. You have The Bad, who is Park Chang-yi, an assassin for hire, much like Angel Eyes in the original film, played by Byung Hun Lee. God, I'm horrible at these names. And then you have The Good, who is Park Doo-won, played by Woo Sung Jung. Now that we got all the names out of the way, we can talk about the movie. I had pretty high expectations for this movie. It came out 2 years ago. I've heard a lot of good things about it. And my opinion of this movie is, that's pretty good. It's okay. Maybe a 6.5, 6.25. But my real complaint with the movie is, unlike the original film, where we spent a lot of time with the good and the ugly, And I hate to make the analogy, but I would say it's not a criticism of this film because of the elephant, but it's a reference. You spend a lot of time with the good and the ugly, getting to know them, seeing their character quirks. This time, you only spend a lot of time with the weird. The bad and the good just come in and they leave. Come in, shoot each other, and leave. Come in, shoot each other, and leave. Come in, shoot at each other, and leave. They don't really serve... You don't get to know them. You don't care about them. So the weird is the only one you get to know. Now, he also happens to be the one with the most backstory. And... I don't know. It was okay. I mean, the action, there's a lot of action in the movie, as you might be able to imagine, and they were pretty good. The action is kind of like a combination of the Chinese martial arts style, where, you know, a lot of people doing over-the-top jumps, and if you've seen Red Cliff, a lot of things where you have over-the-top weapons hitting each other, that sort of style. And a little bit of a dark humor to it, you know, characters, one character is driving a little, like, World War II buggy motorcycle cart, and... A guy drives up next to him and pulls out a scythe, and the guy in the buggy car pulls out a gun. You know, kind of a little quasi-Indiana Jones nod. That sort of stuff. It has, you know, that kind of dark humor. But one of my real complaints, I'd say, with the movie would be in Kim Ju-won's kind of frantic directing. And I don't know what it is, but during a lot of the action scenes, I felt a lot of disjointment. You know, you'd have the camera fixed on these characters, and it'd be wobbling and wobbling and wobbling because they're on a horse. And so the character's wobbling and wobbling and wobbling and wobbling. And then it'd be like a real hard cut straight to a guy in a car, no camera movement. And my head would just go, okay, slow down, please. And that happened quite a bit throughout the movie. You know, characters would be flinging swords around and jumping through windows and up top, and then you quick cut to a character not moving. And... it's, you know, a bit of the shaky camera nausea there, which usually doesn't happen. I'm pretty good with the Bourne movies, but I think with the Bourne movies, it's because it's a constantly flowing camera. I adjust to it. But when you go really shaky, not shaky, really shaky, not shaky, really shaky, not shaky, my head just, I don't know, it doesn't process that quite as well. But I don't want to complain too much about it. It was a lot of fun, a lot of good chuckles, a lot of interesting characters. It kept my interest pretty well. I would have liked more character development. I would have liked maybe better formed action sequences. They felt a little rushed at times. But overall, if you are looking for a Korean film to watch, if you are looking for a foreign action film to watch, I would recommend picking it up. It's very entertaining. A lot of good anti-hero characters, really, in the Sergio Leone homage. Be sure to check it out. Now, I promised you this earlier on during the official story. I'm going to talk for about 2 minutes. Historical film watching. I have a very particular way, because The Good, the Bad, and the Weird also takes place during the sort of Japan and Korean conflict in Manchuria, I think in the 1940s-ish. I want to say that's about right. But the way I approach films that I know take place in historical context is very simple. I look up the events that won't affect the movie. You know, if you're watching a World War II movie, you probably much know from school, but you may not know a lot about the Manchuria, Russian, and Japan involvement during the 1900s. So it might be beneficial to you to go up and just Google that. Now, look at IMDb and figure out what events it's taking place in. And so that's sort of what I do. I go to Wikipedia or I go to Encyclopedia Britannica and I read, you know, little snippets about it. Because I also did the same thing with the official story. I read the synopsis and I said, well, if I'm going to understand this movie, it'll probably be beneficial so that I understand a little bit of the context of what's going on. And I went and read a little bit about the Argentinian Dirty War. But I know not everyone wants to do that. And I understand it, but I think if you're not going to do the research on the historical event, you can't complain not knowing the historical event too much about the movie, because it's kind of your fault for not knowing about the history. Sorry. You know, I don't know, it's just a pet peeve of mine. I don't like people who complain, well, I don't understand about the history. Well, that's your problem, it's not the movies. The movie's not a historical lesson. Now, if it's meant to be that way, like a film like Patton, which is really kind of a historical lesson about this character, they can't spend the whole time explaining everything about World War II for you. You know about World War II, which helps you with the movie. these movies do the same thing. They kind of explain it to you. Now, I'd say a movie that does a good job of history would probably be The Longest Day. You don't have to know a whole lot about the war for that movie. But in general, you have to do that. You can't watch history movies, nothing about the history, and then complain about the movie because you didn't know anything about the history. I've read reviews like that. I don't think anyone for the 1001 Movie Club did it. I didn't read everyone's review entirely. So sorry if I'm complaining about you. But that's one thing. Now, if you want to say, I think knowing more about the history would help, I can understand that. But then my question is, if you do that a lot, if you say, knowing more about the history of this, the events would probably help me like this movie, and you write that about 6 or 7 times for history movies, why don't you just start reading the history about the movies? You know, the context around them. It will help. Trust me. Do it. That's going to be all for this week's podcast. You can check out all the podcasts at univarn.blogspot.com. That's UNIVARN. Ciao. Toodles. Bye. See you later. Adios, amigos. Or whatever random way of saying bye you know. The end. Aww.